Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the skillful art of manipulation. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present The Orgasm Clause, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1: The Devil in a Corner Office. There are places in this world that bleed power through the walls. You can smell it before you ever see it. It's in the leather of the chairs, the bitter edge of expensive cologne hanging in the air, the cold gleam of polished steel that reflects a version of yourself you barely recognize. Holloway and Chase corporate headquarters was one of those places. And I wasn't there to worship it. I was there to burn it to the fucking ground. My first day started like a cliche. A tight skirt, a white blouse just shy of inappropriate, and heels sharp enough to slit a man's ego open. I walked past security with a laminated intern badge clipped to my chest and a lie on my lips. Smiled at the receptionist, gave the HR lady my best, I'm eager and grateful face, and let them believe I was just another overachieving college girl lucky enough to land a spot in one of the top firms in the city. I wasn't lucky. I was surgical. And the man behind the door at the end of the hallway? He was the infection. Richard Holloway, CEO, silver-tongued sadist, poster boy for toxic masculinity in overpriced suits. He was the kind of man who measured his worth by the size of his watch and the number of people who flinched when he entered a room. The office itself was a mirror of his soul, soulless. Cold. Designed for intimidation. Everything was monochrome, clinical, like color was too beneath him. A floor-to-ceiling window overlooked the skyline, but it felt less like a view and more like a throne. I knocked, even though I didn't have to. He already knew I was coming. "Close the door," he said without looking up. His voice wasn't a request. It was a command wrapped in ice, and delivered with the casual cruelty of someone used to obedience. I obeyed for now. He didn't look at me for the first full minute. Kept typing on his laptop like I didn't exist, like he was making a point. Then finally, slowly, he looked up and smiled, this wolfish, lazy thing that didn't reach his eyes. "You're the new intern?" he asked, even though he already knew the answer. "Yes, Mr. Holloway." "Don't call me Mr. Holloway. Makes me feel old. Call me Richard." I hated that name. I hated the way it sounded in his mouth, and I hated even more how many times I'd have to pretend not to gag when saying it. "Yes, Richard." He motioned for me to sit, but never told me to relax. That was the game. He gave you space but never comfort. Made you feel like you were always on the edge of a trap. I sat anyway, crossing my legs carefully, placing my hands in my lap. I knew how to play docile when I needed to. It's what men like him expect from girls like me. "You're not here to answer phones," he said. "You're here to learn. But don't waste my time. I don't give second chances, and I don't babysit." "Understood," I said, meeting his eyes dead on. A flicker of something crossed his face. Interest, maybe. Challenge. He liked to break people. I was just his new toy. Except I wasn't here to be played with. He didn't remember my mother. Why would he? Just another woman he steamrolled to get his numbers up. She worked in PR, gave him 14 years of her life, and he fired her without a severance or a second thought when she refused to cover up one of his little scandals. Something involving a junior employee and a non-disclosure agreement. She spiraled after that. Pills. Shame. Silence. Richard ruined her. So I made it my mission to ruin him back. But not through courtrooms or protests. No. Richard was a man of image, empire, reputation. So I'd dismantle it all from the inside, slow, seductive, and sweet. And the way in. Not through him. Through her. Celia Holloway. His wife. His trophy. His shadow. She was the kind of woman who floated when she walked. Always draped in muted designer shades, pearls or diamonds depending on the day. She never smiled too long or too wide, and when she did, it looked like it hurt. There was a sadness in her I recognized, a deep, hollow kind of pain that only comes from being owned. I first saw her in the office 3 days into my internship. She walked in unexpectedly during a staff meeting. Every man in the room stood. Every woman watched her with a mix of awe and pity. She didn't speak much. Just placed a hand on Richard's shoulder like a well-trained ghost. But our eyes locked. only for a second, just long enough for the static to start. I knew. She knew. That same week, I followed her online. She had a public-facing Instagram filled with press-ready poses and vacation photos. But buried deeper in the recesses of a burner profile linked to a spa she frequented, I found what I needed. Photos of her with a younger man, smiling, touching, not quite subtle. And I knew I had her. Because women like Celia don't risk being seen unless they want to be seen. So I gave her something to see. At the Holloway Foundation's annual gala, I wore a crimson dress, slit high on one thigh and open at the back. No bra. No shame. I knew she'd be there. Knew Richard would be too busy schmoozing donors to notice anything but himself. I watched her watching me across the room, her gaze dark, hungry, cautious. She was pretending not to stare, but her fingers clenched the stem of her champagne glass a little too tight. When I accidentally brushed against her near the hors d'oeuvres table, the contact lingered. "Sorry, Mrs. Holloway," I said, my voice silk with a blade under it. She didn't flinch, just tilted her head. "You're the intern." "Yes, ma'am." But not for long. That made her blink. A shift in her expression, subtle, sharp. "Ambitious," she said. "Only when the prize is worth it." She looked at me like I was a puzzle she wasn't sure she wanted to solve. Then she walked away without another word. But the game had started. The next week, she found excuses to call the office during my shift. Asked for small things, event confirmations, dry cleaning pickups, personal notes for Richard. One day, she asked me to drop something off at their home while he was out of town. That was when it happened. I wore something understated, respectful. Hair tied up. Minimal makeup. But I brought something else with me, presents. The kind that fills a room before your mouth does. She answered the door herself. No staff. Just her. "You didn't have to bring this in person," she said. "You asked for discretion," I replied. I assumed that meant face to face. Celia stared at me like she was deciding whether to kiss me or kill me. Then, without another word, she turned and walked into the house. I followed, of course. She poured herself a glass of white wine, gestured toward the bar. "You drink. Only when I shouldn't." That made her laugh. First time I'd seen her relax. We sat. Talked. She asked questions that had nothing to do with Richard, and everything to do with me. What I wanted. Why I was here. If I had a boyfriend. I let her circle me, like a shark too bored to bite. Then, after an hour of cat and mouse, she stood and said, "I need to grab something upstairs. Wait here." I waited 30 seconds. Then followed. She was in the bedroom when I entered, standing at the window, her back to me. "I said to wait," she said, voice calm. "I didn't want to." She turned. Her eyes were darker now. "You think this is a game?" "No," I said. "I think this is a contract. You write the terms. I sign with my body." The silence stretched. Then she crossed the room, grabbed me by the wrist, and kissed me like she'd been holding her breath for years. We didn't make love. We fucked. Raw. Urgent. Wordless. Like we were punishing someone else with every movement. She was dominant at first, hungry, precise, but I flipped her mid-act. Took control. Made her say my name with her legs trembling and her teeth biting down on a silk pillow. And above us, the lens blinked red. Hidden. Recording. Every gasp. Every cry. Every violation of her marriage vows. I didn't do it for lust. I did it for leverage. Because now Celia Holloway belonged to me. And through her, I'd make Richard Holloway choke on his own empire. Chapter 2, Morning After the Firestorm. You'd think after a night like that, a woman like Celia Holloway would need time to process. To retreat. To drown herself in guilt, or denial, or some designer perfume to wash away the scent of betrayal clinging to her thighs. But that's not what happened. No, Celia didn't run. She didn't cry. She made me breakfast. I woke up in a guest bedroom that looked more like a showroom in Architectural Digest. All marble tones, silver finishes, and sheets that cost more than my entire semester tuition. My body ached in places I hadn't known could ache. My thighs, my ribs, even my jaw. She hadn't just fucked me. She'd devoured me. And in return, I'd offered myself like a weapon. The air still smelled faintly of her perfume. Something rare and foreign, probably imported from a boutique in France. Something that didn't exist in the world I came from. I stood slowly, every nerve in my body remembering the night before in vivid, electric flashes. My dress was crumpled on the floor like a used lie. My panties? Missing in action. I walked barefoot through the hall, past the mirrored walls and minimalist art, until I reached the kitchen. And there she was. Mrs. Celia fucking Holloway. Hair tied in a loose knot. Barefoot. wearing a silk robe the color of wet blood. No makeup. No armor. She looked up at me as casually as if we'd just finished yoga and not torn each other apart the night before. "I made coffee," she said, like this was normal. Like we were normal. I didn't speak. Just stared. Watching her move was like watching a tiger clean its paws after a kill, graceful, precise, deceptively calm. She slid a plate toward me across the counter. Scrambled eggs, avocado toast, and fruit cut into obsessive little cubes. She wasn't just being polite. She was making a point. I sat, took a bite, watched her over the rim of my mug. She sipped her coffee like this was just another morning in paradise. No shame. No hesitation. "So," she said finally, tilting her head, "are we going to talk about it? What's there to talk about?" I replied, keeping my tone as neutral as possible. Celia smiled. "Slow. Dangerous. You're not what I expected. Neither are you." She took a breath, almost like she was about to say something meaningful, something raw. But then her face shifted, back into that perfect, emotionless porcelain she wore like a second skin. She stood up and started clearing the dishes. "I need to go meet with a donor this afternoon," she said. "And you, I imagine, need to get back to the office." She didn't ask me to stay. But she didn't ask me to leave either. Before I left, I glanced at her bedroom. The room where secrets had spilled like wine and moans had shattered the silence. The room where I captured everything on a camera the size of a coin, perfectly positioned in the art piece above her bed. She had no idea. I walked out of that house with clean clothes, freshly applied lipstick, and a fire raging in my chest. Because now I had ammunition. Now the game was real. But the real surprise? I wasn't the only one who changed that night. Back at the office, Richard was unusually chipper. A rare thing. He joked with the board, barked orders with less venom, even called me by my actual name during a meeting. I should have been suspicious, but I already knew why. He was fucking someone. Richard was always his calmest after sex. And judging by the texts I intercepted from his assistant's laptop, it wasn't Celia. He thought his wife was home, sipping tea and reading Vogue. She was licking my name off her lips. I didn't speak to Celia for the next 3 days. She didn't text. Didn't call. And I let her think I was giving her space. Let her stew in the silence. Let her wonder if I was going to confess, or worse, disappear. That's how you take control. You give them the best night of their life, then vanish like it meant nothing. On day 4, a car pulled up outside the office, her car. The driver didn't come out. But the back window rolled down, and her voice drifted from inside. "Get in." I didn't hesitate. Inside, the air was cold, the windows tinted, the walls between us thicker than ever. "You've been quiet," she said, not looking at me. "You've been busy." She smirked. "I don't like being ignored." "Then don't do things that make people walk away." She turned just slightly, her eyes flicking toward mine. "Was it a mistake?" I leaned closer. Close enough for her to feel my breath on her neck. "Depends on what you do next." She didn't respond. Just reached over and handed me a slim envelope. Inside was a key card. "To the penthouse suite at the Indigo," she said. "Room 1903. Friday night. 9 p.m. Then the window rolled back up, and the car disappeared into traffic like she'd never been there at all. Friday came, and I wore black. Not sexy black. Power black. High neck dress, red lips, hair slicked back. When I walked into that suite, Celia was already there, drinking red wine in lingerie that looked like it had been custom-stitched by Satan himself. But this time, I didn't let her lead. I cuffed her to the bed. Silken ropes. Gentle. But firm. She gasped, not in fear. In need. I made her beg. Slowly. Repeatedly. Made her confess the things she'd never whispered to anyone. Her resentment for Richard, her loneliness, the affair she suspected but couldn't prove. I made her feel seen. Touched. Owned. And then, when she was trembling on the edge of bliss, I whispered into her ear. "You belong to me now." She didn't argue. The camera was running again. Another angle. Another night. Another tape. When it was over, she cried. Not because she was ashamed, but because she didn't know what to do next. She was unraveling, and I was the thread she couldn't stop pulling. I let her fall asleep in my arms, stroking her hair while her breath slowed. But inside, I was calculating. Because 2 tapes were enough to start the fire. But it would take a few more nights, a few more confessions, and a little more pain before I burned the whole house down. I left before dawn. Left her with tangled sheets, trembling thighs, and my scent all over her pillow. I didn't look back. Because I already knew. She'd never be able to quit me. And Richard Holloway's perfect little world? It was already starting to rot from the inside. Chapter 3. A whisper becomes a weapon. It didn't start with a threat. Not a bold one, anyway. It started with a whisper. The kind that makes you turn your head, check the shadows, wonder if what you heard was real. That's how manipulation works. You don't kick the door down, you leave it cracked and let them swing it open themselves. By the time I sent the first clip, Celia had already begun to tremble. Not from guilt, but from dependency. You don't fuck a stranger and then invite them back unless you're starving for something deeper. Something desperate. And Celia, she was ravenous. For touch. For control. For freedom. For me. It had been 2 weeks since the Indigo Suite. 2 weeks since I left her cuffed, trembling, crying in my arms like a child asking not to be abandoned. She didn't know it yet, but she wasn't afraid of being caught. She was afraid of being forgotten. I didn't text. Didn't call. I left her in silence. And in that silence, she unraveled. The footage I had, two perfect angles, crystal clear sound, her voice breathless with pleasure and confession, wasn't just leverage. It was a masterpiece. I spent hours editing it. Not to humiliate her, but to control her. The most damning parts weren't the moans or the arch of her back. It was what she said when she thought no one else would hear. I hate him. I hate Richard so fucking much I want to burn his heart while it's still beating. She'd whispered it like a prayer. I looped it. Enhanced the audio. Synced it with the moment she came. That's what I sent her. 31 seconds of pleasure laced with poison. No warning. No context. Just a file, encrypted, sent from an anonymous email address to her private inbox. The one she thought no one knew about. The subject line was blank. The body of the email contained two words. Do you trust me? I watched the read receipt ping 5 minutes later. No reply. But I knew what she was doing. She was pacing her mansion in silent panic, checking her bedroom, checking her phone, rewatching the video over and over, wondering when the next shoe would drop. I didn't make her wait long. That night, I showed up at a gala she was co-chairing for some arts foundation. She wore emerald satin and a fake smile. Richard was at her side, laughing with a senator, his hand glued to her waist like ownership. I made eye contact with her across the room, brief. Controlled. Just enough to set her heartbeat off beat. Then I turned away. She cornered me in the bathroom 30 minutes later, her voice low and sharp like broken glass. What the fuck was that? She hissed, pinning me against the marble sink with her eyes. You saw it, I said coolly. Thoughts? Are you trying to destroy me? No. I'm trying to help you destroy him. She flinched. That's when I knew the hook was in deep. Not just lust. Not just fear. Curiosity. She wanted to know what I meant. What I had planned. How far I was willing to go. I leaned in close, lips brushing her ear. You give me what I need, and I give you freedom. From Richard. From this fucking life. From pretending. Her breath hitched. Her grip on the edge of the counter tightened. And if I say no, she whispered. Then that video ends up in Richard's inbox before breakfast. Along with the burner phone we used to text. The receipts. The suite reservation. Everything. Her eyes filled with something dangerous, not tears. Rage. Regret. Relief. You bitch, she said under her breath. I smiled. Takes one to know one. She didn't say another word. Just left, heels clicking like gunshots on marble, her shoulders tighter than piano wire. 3 days later, I got the first drop. It was subtle. A forwarded calendar invite from Celia's private email. Access to Richard's next 6 weeks of meetings. His travel schedule. His private dinner with the board chairman. All wrapped in a casual subject line. Your requested itinerary. We were in. From there, I dug deeper. I started showing up to meetings I wasn't invited to, making copies of reports he thought were confidential. I charmed his executive assistant into giving me the building's security schedule with nothing more than a wink and a fake story about an HR audit. Every piece of intel I gathered, I archived, protected, layered behind firewalls and encrypted drives. I wasn't just going after Richard's marriage. I was coming for his kingdom. Celia sent more. Financial documents. Passwords. Photos of his handwritten notes. The prenup agreement tucked in a manila folder inside his private safe. The one I cracked in under 10 minutes with the help of a USB borescope and the combination hidden in the initials of their wedding anniversary. Idiot. The prenup had a clause. An infidelity clause. If Celia proved Richard was unfaithful, she got everything. The penthouse. The accounts. The shares in Holloway and Chase. Everything. Which meant all I needed to do was prove what we both already knew. that Richard was fucking his 26-year-old executive assistant in hotel rooms booked under a company alias. I tracked her. I recorded them. And when I had the footage, I didn't go to Celia. I went to him. Because Celia wasn't my only pawn anymore. Richard had to feel what it was like to squirm. I waited until the firm's quarterly shareholders meeting. The one where he stood in front of the board in his Navy Armani suit, bragging about record profits and cultural transformation, as if he hadn't just finished face-fucking the assistant in a hotel 3 hours earlier. While he was presenting, I walked into his private office and left a flash drive on his desk. Black. Unlabeled. Untouched. I stood in the shadows across the street that night, watching as the office lights stayed on longer than usual. He opened it. He saw himself on screen, grainy footage, but clear enough. His face. His dick. Her moans. The timestamp. Then the second file autoplayed. Celia's voice. I hate him. I hate Richard so fucking much I want to burn his heart while it's still beating. I could only imagine the silence in that office. The sound of his breath catching. The sweat prickling under his collar. The panic crawling down his spine. He didn't call security. He didn't call Celia. He called me. Private line. Untraceable number I gave him once, pretending it was for urgent marketing emergencies. Who the fuck are you? He demanded. I smiled as I leaned back in bed, naked, covered in Celia's lipstick from the night before. I'm your intern, Richard, I purred. Didn't you say on my first day that you don't give second chances? He was silent. I let the silence linger. Then I spoke again. You're going to transfer 40% of your shares into a holding account I control. Temporary, of course. Just until we determine whether you're capable of behaving like a loyal husband. You've lost your fucking mind. No, Richard. You lost control. I just picked it up off the floor. He hung up. The next day, the paperwork showed up in my inbox, unsigned. But that was okay, because the war had begun. And wars aren't won in one battle. They're won by inches, by leverage, by secrets whispered between sheets and threats scribbled in lipstick on hotel mirrors. I had Celia. I had the tapes. And now I had his attention. The empire was cracking. And I was just getting started. Chapter 4, Queenmaker. There's a moment in every con where the mark stops being a victim and starts becoming an accomplice. That moment is delicate, like a hairline crack in a wine glass. One wrong vibration, and everything shatters. But if you're careful, if you whisper just the right words in just the right ear, the crack doesn't spread. It deepens. And once it does, there's no going back. Celia Holloway crossed that line at exactly 3:12 p.m. on a Wednesday. She didn't call. She didn't text. She showed up at my apartment unannounced, wearing sunglasses bigger than her ego, a coat worth more than my rent, and heels she had no intention of taking off before storming inside. I barely had time to lock the door before she slapped me. Hard. You went to him, she hissed. I smiled, even as my cheek stung. He needed to know the game started. She stepped closer, nostrils flaring, hands shaking. Not from rage, but from adrenaline. You're out of your goddamn mind. And yet here you are, I whispered, brushing a strand of hair from her face. Coming back for more. She grabbed me by the collar and kissed me like she hated me. And maybe she did. But she needed me more than she feared me now. The lines had blurred. I wasn't just her mistake anymore. I was her weapon. We fucked on my kitchen table like animals. No music. No soft words. Just the raw kind of release that feels like ripping out a confession. She moaned into my mouth, bit my lip until I tasted blood, and came with my name scratching out of her throat like a broken hymn. Afterwards, she lit a cigarette with trembling fingers. I should kill you, she said. You won't. Why not? Because I'm the only one who sees you. The real you. She didn't answer. Just smoked in silence while I lay naked beside her, watching her face. That face that had once been flawless porcelain was now smeared mascara and fury. And I had never seen anything more beautiful. That was the day she became my queen. And I became her kingmaker. Over the next 3 weeks, we built the plan. We met in secret. Always in new places. A private club in the basement of a jazz bar. A decaying motel off the freeway with no cameras. Once, inside her husband's own wine cellar while he slept upstairs with a Xanax-induced blackout. We spoke in low voices, always careful, always circling the inevitable truth. Celia wasn't afraid of Richard anymore. She wanted to replace him. But wanting power and knowing how to wield it? Those are two different things. That's where I came in. Step one was visibility. Celia had spent her life as Richard's silent accessory. A mannequin at galas, a perfect ghost in press photos, a whispered presence behind every charitable donation. We changed that. She launched a private foundation, the Holloway Initiative for Women in Business. Public. High profile. Aggressive. Her name started appearing on panels. On podcasts. In headlines. We staged press releases, orchestrated viral soundbites, planted paparazzi photos of her smiling with political figures. She was no longer the background. She was the entire fucking stage. And the world noticed. Step two was leverage. Richard had barely begun to feel the noose around his neck. The video I'd sent him had rattled him, but not enough. Men like him don't fear blackmail. They fear exposure. So I sent him another flash drive. This one included Celia's voice again, but not from the bedroom. It was from one of our meetings in the wine cellar. Her voice was calm, cold, deliberate. He's weak now. He doesn't see what's coming. He thinks he's too big to fail. Overlaid on top of footage from the board meeting, where he'd laughed off a shareholder's concern about ethics violations. I timed the delivery with a conference call he was set to have with the firm's private investors. 2 hours after the call ended, Richard called me again. This time he didn't yell. He begged. What do you want? His voice was hushed, flat, almost hollow. Tell me what the fuck you want. I didn't answer right away. I wanted him to feel the silence, to let it settle into the cracks forming in his mind. Then I whispered. I want you to hand over the throne. Impossible. Then I burn everything. He hung up. 2 days later, I received a package at my office cubicle. No return label. Inside was a manila folder with documents, shareholder transfer requests, a revised power of attorney form listing Celia as emergency interim CEO in the event of medical or mental incapacitation, and a handwritten note. This is all I can give for now. I held that paper like a holy relic. Celia read it and smiled. Now we just need to break him. And oh, how we broke him. Richard began to unravel in stages. First came the public argument at a board dinner. A waiter spilled wine on his jacket, and he screamed so loud it made headlines. Then the miscalculated speech at the regional summit, rambling, incoherent, visibly sweating under the stage lights. The internet ripped him apart. Meme after meme. Hashtag sweaty CEO. Hashtag wine rage Richard. He started drinking more. Paranoia set in. He snapped at interns, accused his assistant of leaking documents, fired a VP without cause. And all the while Celia smiled. She comforted him in public. Kissed his cheek during interviews. Even defended him on national television. Behind the scenes? She fucked me in the bathroom of his office, her nails digging into my skin while she laughed into my mouth. He thinks I'm loyal, she gasped between moans. He thinks I'm his. No, I whispered, sliding deeper inside her. You belong to me now. We filmed that too. Not for leverage. For memory. Because I knew one day, she'd look back and wonder who she really was before she met me. And she'd have her answer. A puppet. And now, a queen with blood on her hands. The final phase came unexpectedly. Richard collapsed during a board meeting. Stress-induced panic attack. Celia rode with him in the ambulance, weeping for the cameras. Played the loving wife to perfection. While he recovered in a private clinic, Celia invoked the clause in the documents he'd signed. Temporary executive authority. The board ratified it within 48 hours. She was in charge. Officially. Publicly. Permanently. And I was still just an intern. A silent architect in the shadows. But I didn't care about titles. Because I already had everything that mattered. Her. The company. The tapes. The truth. And now, with Richard sedated, isolated and powerless, we could finally begin phase two. Not just revenge. Empire building. Chapter 5, Poison in the Honey. Power doesn't always corrupt. Sometimes it seduces. Sometimes it whispers sweet nothings while it wraps around your throat like silk, cutting off just enough air to make you want more. Sometimes it turns on you. I didn't realize how much the taste of control had changed Celia until the first time she told me no. We were in the presidential suite at the Astoria, late at night, champagne half-finished, her lipstick smeared across my inner thighs. She was lying beside me, naked except for a diamond necklace I'd watched her steal from her own jewelry vault an hour earlier. I reached for her. She pulled away. I'm tired, she said, turning toward the window. At first, I thought it was nothing. A mood. A moment. But the next day, when I showed up at the firm with a new folder of blackmail insurance, documents that would have given her full access to Richard's offshore accounts, she didn't even look up from her laptop. You're becoming reckless, she said, typing. We need to slow down. That word, we used to mean alliance. Now it sounded like a leash. She didn't ask where I got the documents. Didn't touch me. Didn't smile. She just nodded, told me to email her a summary, and dismissed me with a click of her mouse like I was some junior assistant pitching a bad idea. And in that moment, I felt something I hadn't felt since the day Richard called me sweetheart and dismissed me from a meeting. Small. I left her office with a tight throat and a sick feeling in my gut. At first, I told myself it was strategy. She was playing cautious. We were in too deep. We had to consolidate. But the truth kept gnawing at me like rats in the walls. Celia was changing, and not into something better, into something scarier. That week, I started watching her differently, tracking her moves, listening not to what she said but what she didn't. The warmth she used to fake in public was gone, replaced with something colder, calculated. She began dressing sharper, speaking less, delegating everything to a tight, inner circle of female executives she'd pulled in overnight, women I didn't know. Women who didn't know me. Her calls grew shorter. Her texts delayed. The sex was less frequent, more mechanical. She came like it was a chore and rolled away like it didn't matter. And still I kept crawling back, like a dog begging for its leash. Because I didn't just want Celia's body anymore. I wanted her devotion. I wanted to matter. But the worst part? She could feel it. And she used it. 2 weeks into her reign as acting CEO, Celia invited me to a private dinner on the roof of a members-only club. I dressed to kill, sleek black, thigh-high slit, red lips, but when I arrived, she was already seated with someone else. A man. Tall. Lean. Dark suit. Smug face. She stood, kissed me on the cheek, and introduced him as Marcus Vail, financial advisor to half of Manhattan's elite. And apparently, her new strategic partner. Marcus looked at me like I was the garnish on a cocktail he didn't order. You're the intern, he said, offering a fake smile. I returned it with poison. And you're the unnecessary middleman. Celia laughed. Play nice, she purred. But it wasn't the kind of laugh she used to share with me. It was performance. Theater. She was playing a new game. And I wasn't her co-star anymore. I was the fucking understudy. I barely spoke during the meal. Just drank, smiled, nodded. All the while, my brain spun like a loaded revolver. She hadn't told me about Marcus. She hadn't asked. That night, back at her place, I confronted her. What is he? I asked, standing at the foot of her bed, while she took off her earrings like I hadn't just bled for her in silence all evening. An investor, she said. You don't need him. I need stability, she snapped. Credibility. Someone with a name that isn't dripping in scandal and sex. I froze. My mouth went dry. Is that what I am to you? I asked. Scandal and sex? She didn't answer. Not with words. She walked over, gripped my jaw, and kissed me so hard I tasted metal. Her nails dug into my skin. Her breath was fire. You're everything, she whispered. But not forever. That cut deeper than any slap. Because I knew what it meant. I was the ladder she'd climbed to escape the cage Richard built. And now that she was standing at the top, she was ready to kick it down. I didn't sleep that night. I lay next to her in silence, her head on my chest, her arm draped over my stomach like she still needed me. But her fingers were still. Her breathing too even. She wasn't clinging. She was done. In the morning, she left early. Claimed she had meetings. Kissed my forehead, told me to lock up. And then she was gone. I walked through her penthouse like a stranger. Everything was in its place. Too clean. Too perfect. Like she'd already started erasing me. Then I saw it, an envelope on her desk. Unsealed. Inside, a copy of the deed transfer documents I had forged for her weeks ago. The ones Richard had refused to sign. Except now they were signed. And dated. Yesterday. Without my help. Without my knowledge. The signature was real. Verified. Witnessed. Notarized. Which meant only one thing. Celia had gone to Richard without telling me. She'd made a deal. Cut me out. And still smiled in my face like we were in this together. I didn't cry. I didn't scream. I laughed. Loud. Sharp. Bitter. Because she thought she was the only one holding cards. She forgot who taught her the game. She forgot who made her queen. So I opened my laptop and started uploading. One tape at a time. The bedroom confession. The wine cellar strategy session. The bathroom sex. The handcuff footage. Every moan. Every threat. Every dirty little whisper she'd begged into my skin. I encrypted them. Watermarked them. Scheduled them. Not to post. Not yet. But to remind myself what I still had. She wanted to erase me? She'd have to dig me out with a scalpel. Because I wasn't just her intern. I was her ghost. Her lover. Her mirror. Her fucking end. Chapter 6, Blood in the Mirror. Every war reaches a point where bullets aren't enough. Where blood doesn't satisfy. Where the silence after the blast feels heavier than the bomb itself. That's where we were now. Celia and I had become two reflections in the same broken mirror. Both of us cracked, both of us jagged, both of us dangerously close to cutting our own throats with the very shards we once used to conquer. But the difference? I remembered who held the camera. She forgot who pressed record. After I found the notarized deed transfer, her silent betrayal, I didn't spiral. Not right away. I focused. Watched. Tracked her movements like I was building a case against a criminal I still wanted to fuck. She was everywhere suddenly. Panels. Press. Posing next to Marcus Vale in every glossy article, as if he'd been the one who guided her rise. The same man who weeks ago had called me the intern, with that smug little smile. Now he was in her circle. Her right hand. Her shadow. I started seeing headlines. Celia Holloway. The Ice Queen with a Plan. Rebuilding Empires. The strategic brilliance behind Holloway's wife-turned-CEO. Inside the new power duo, Holloway and Vale. And my name? Nowhere. Not even a whisper in the credits of her coronation. She was erasing me in real time. So I sent her a message. A private one. Hand-delivered. An envelope slipped under her office door, no signature. Inside, a single black USB, wrapped in crimson ribbon, and a note written in black ink. In case you forgot who made you. The tape was short. 37 seconds of her on her knees, looking up at the camera with smeared mascara and my hand buried in her hair. Her moans whispered into my skin, her voice trembling as she begged. Don't stop. Please. I'm yours. It was time-stamped. Dated. Undeniable. And I knew the moment she saw it. Because her assistant quit the next day. Because her driver stopped showing up. Because Marcus Vale's social media accounts went silent for 48 hours. And then she called me. Not from her number. From a blocked line. I answered on the first ring. Why? She asked. No hello. No emotion. Just that one word. You should have kept me close, I replied. You think this makes you powerful? No, Celia. It makes me dangerous. There was a long pause. The kind that feels like a sniper locking in. Then her voice dropped to a whisper. You still want me, don't you? I laughed, but it came out bitter. Wanting and trusting aren't the same. And you think I ever trusted you? That stung more than I expected. But I didn't let it show. Let's not pretend we were ever anything but wolves, I said. But I held first. Don't forget that. Click. She hung up. After that, things moved quickly. The story broke a week later. Not ours yet, but enough to shake the ground she stood on. A leak from within the board. Documents that revealed Marcus Vale's strategic investments in Holloway and Chase were fraudulent. Misrepresented. Faked. He'd used offshore shell companies to funnel money into his own holding firm, boosting Celia's public stock profile without actual capital. The press devoured it. Power couple built on lies? Vale and Holloway, House of Cards. She held a press conference. Denied knowledge. Threw Marcus under the bus with surgical precision. He was arrested 2 days later. But the damage was done. The shine on her crown dulled overnight. And me? I watched from the shadows, smiling. Because I leaked those documents. Because I had hacked into Marcus's drive 3 nights after that rooftop dinner, while he was too busy whispering into Celia's ear to notice the Trojan I'd slipped into his phone during a fake, accidental run-in in the hotel bar. You don't erase me without paying for it in blood. And Celia? She was bleeding. She showed up at my apartment at midnight. No guards. No driver. No makeup. Just her. Raw. Trembling. Pissed. I opened the door already half-naked, bottle of wine in hand. She pushed past me without a word. I should kill you, she said, pacing. You almost cost me everything. You already cost me everything, I shot back. You made me invisible. I protected you, she snapped. I gave you distance, plausible deniability. No, I growled, stepping toward her. You used me like a gun. Fired me at your problems, and now that the smoke's cleared, you don't like how I smell. We were inches apart now, breathing each other's heat. Teeth bared. Then she kissed me. Hard. Violent. Like she wanted to kill me with her mouth and bury me in her thighs. We fucked against the kitchen counter. Fast. Brutal. No words. No rules. Just pain and pleasure twisted so tightly you couldn't tell which was which. After we collapsed on the floor. Sweating. Breathing. Broken. I hate you, she whispered. Good, I murmured. it means you still feel. The next morning, I woke up alone. Again. But this time, something felt different. Colder. Quieter. I checked my phone. Nothing. Checked the door. Locked. Then I saw the note. Left under my keyboard. No signature. Just one sentence. You want war? Let's make it public. My blood froze. She was going to out us. Preemptively. Before I could weaponize the tapes. Before I could leak our twisted little fairy tale. She was going to frame the narrative. Paint herself the victim. Me as the predator. And it would work. Because I had the sex. But she had the sympathy. I knew what I had to do. I called a journalist. Not just any journalist. The same one who exposed Marcus Vale. A woman named Deja Knox. Ruthless. Brilliant. Queer. And very, very bored with the usual corporate scandals. I invited her to my apartment. Off the record. No phones. I poured two glasses of wine and handed her the flash drive. Everything on here is real, I said. Unedited. Undeniable. But if you run it, you run all of it. She stared at me for a long time, then asked the question I knew was coming. Why are you doing this now? And I told her the truth. Because love turned to power. And power turned to poison. And the only way to survive poison is to drink the antidote first. Chapter 7, The Final Clause. I always knew it would end like this. Not in silence. Not in peace. But in flames. The kind that don't just burn down walls, but scorch every memory that ever touched them. The kind that leave you standing in the ash with your own fingerprints smeared across the matchbox. Celia was the match. But I was the gasoline. And now we were both choking on the smoke. The morning the article dropped, the world stopped spinning. Front page. Black and white headline. Bold. Sex Lies and the Queen of Deception. The Intern Who Toppled an Empire. By Deja Knox. Inside everything. The affair. The manipulation. The sex tapes. The forged documents. The blackmail. The war for control. The collapse of Holloway and Chase. Marcus Vale's scandal. Richard Holloway's breakdown. All of it. Laid bare. No censor. No apologies. Photos. Quotes. Screenshots. Audio clips. And at the center of it all? Me. Not Celia. Me. They called me a predator. A seductress. A corporate saboteur. A calculated manipulator who seduced a vulnerable CEO's wife and extorted an entire empire from the inside. They painted her as a victim of coercion. A woman deceived by a cunning intern. A martyr. A fallen angel. The headlines spun faster than the truth. And the truth. The truth didn't matter. Because perception is power. And Celia had mastered that better than I ever did. That afternoon, my inbox was a graveyard. Job offers rescinded. Friendships ghosted. Messages screenshotted and passed around like warnings. People called me every name they could think of. Homewrecker. Slut. Psycho. Bitch. Predator. Snake. Blackmailer. Whore. They didn't care about the details. About the months of manipulation Celia pulled behind the scenes. About the power dynamic she leveraged from the start. About how I was the one with scars under my ribs and a closet full of secrets she dressed me in. No one cared about what she said in those tapes. Only what I did. The world never sides with the intern. The board at Holloway and Chase launched an immediate internal investigation. Celia was temporarily suspended pending further review. Marcus Vale was facing 5 felony charges. Richard Holloway, still sedated, isolated, irrelevant. And me. I was radioactive. My lease was terminated. My credit cards froze. My school withdrew me, pending review of ethical violations. I became a ghost in my own city. But still, I had one more move left. Because as much as Celia tried to spin the story, she'd made one fatal mistake. She underestimated what I had hidden away. 3 weeks before the story broke, I recorded a conversation. It wasn't sexual. It wasn't dramatic. It was quiet. Chilling. Celia and I in bed. Her voice low. Confessional. Vulnerable. I don't care what happens to Richard, she said. He's a shell. I'm the one who built this new empire. And if anyone tries to take it from me, I'll bury them. Even you. Even you. She said it without blinking. Without shame. And she meant it. I saved that clip. Hid it in an encrypted cloud with a trigger email set to release it to 5 major outlets the moment I pressed one button. It wasn't blackmail. It was my insurance policy. So when Celia invited me to meet, one last time, I accepted. Because I knew this wouldn't be a reconciliation. It would be a reckoning. She chose the same rooftop bar we met Marcus at all those weeks ago. Everything came full circle. She wore white. Symbolic. Clean. Ridiculous. I wore black. No symbolism. Just wore paint. She didn't stand when I arrived. Just sipped her martini and looked at me like I was the ex she regretted letting stay alive. You look tired, she said softly. You look fake, I replied. She smiled. The press loves a good victim. And the board. Cowards. They'll reinstate me in a month. Marcus takes the fall, Richard's tucked away in a psych ward, and you're yesterday's clickbait. I nodded. Waited. Watched. You think this is over? I asked. It is, she said. You lost. I survived. Not yet, I whispered. Then I slid the phone across the table. Pressed play. Her voice filled the air. I'll bury them. Even you. Celia's face didn't change. But her hand trembled slightly as she reached for her glass. I paused the recording. The world may love a victim, I said. But they hate a villain who pretends. Her jaw clenched. You release that and we both go down. No, I said. Just you. I already burned. You loved me, she whispered, voice cracking for the first time in months. I still do, I said honestly. But love doesn't mean mercy. I didn't leak the tape that day. I didn't have to. Because the next morning, Celia Holloway was found unconscious in her penthouse suite. Pills. Wine. A note. Simple. There's no such thing as freedom when every part of you was purchased. She survived. Barely. But the world never forgave her after that. The press turned fast. Branded her unstable. A liar. A manipulator. Said she weaponized her story to climb the ladder and then cried victim to soften the fall. The board cut ties. The foundation closed. Her name became poison. No trial. No charges. But no redemption either. I moved cities. Changed my name. Burned the old phone. Started over. Sometimes people recognize me. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes I wonder what would have happened if I never walked into that office. If I never saw Celia that first day. If I'd just been the intern with dreams instead of the intern with a vendetta. But that girl? She's long dead. What remains is someone else. Sharper. Colder. Untouchable. And every now and then, I dream of her. Celia. Naked. Breathless. Begging. But the memory fades faster every time. Because in the end, the orgasm clause wasn't about sex. It was about power. And power always comes with a price. The end.